Welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And today's show is a celebratory one, since this is our New Year's 2022 show.
Yay!
Yeah.
Oh, we have an audience here, apparently. Yes, it's even more of a celebration because I'm joined on air by five people who I've shared many years of co-activism and friendship, working mostly on nonprofit health and environmental education with Healthy Planet and other groups, covering issues ranging from disease prevention, health promotion, compassion to animals and to all life on Earth, world hunger, social justice issues, climate change, and a whole lot more. So thank you for all joining me. And to give you a bit more insight into our panel, I'll tell you that all of the guests that I have on have been actively contributing to the betterment of our society, and not for personal gain or to get famous or rich, but because they feel that that's just a natural expression of who they are and how much they care. They see themselves as contributing to who we are collectively in each moment. And I know this for a fact. It's just so deeply ingrained that being part of the solution is part of life that they have stepped into this role. So with that, I'm going to ask each of you to just state who you are and say hi to our radio audience.
Hi, I'm Heidi Cohen, and I'm really happy to be joining all of you wonderful people here today. Thank you for having me as a guest.
I'm Bettina Barbier. I've been hanging out with these wonderful people for many years, not eating animals, supporting the environment, and doing everything possible to make it a better world.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I've been on this radio show before, and it's always a lot of fun, and I'm glad to be here again to bring in the new year. I've been a longtime volunteer with Healthy Planet, and thanks, Bob, for having me on.
Always a pleasure, of course.
I'm Jen Grace, and I'm so glad to be here with you folks who I've known for such a long time. And I share many of your same wishes for the world and for the animals and for humans.
My name's Eric Eaton, and I'm really happy to be here to share my thoughts and my feelings and my hopes. There's so much good going on, so much good to celebrate, and I'm just excited about it.
Erica, I'm just reminded of when we started doing our activism together back in 1989, and you were using a computer to create our newsletters, and which were just like typed out sheets, and I was so amazed at how computers worked so much better than typewriters. You know, you could go backspace. And you used to call it slow, stupid computer, but I was amazed.
Yeah, I remember it was hard to keep you from putting the whiteout on my screen. I had to keep it on. Oh, Bob, it's the delete key.
So that's how far back we go. And also, as was mentioned, all of us have been eating an entirely plant-based diet for many decades. We've got certainly over 100 years between all of us, of not eating the way society taught us to eat as kids. And again, that is also related to our commitments to something that is very, very meaningful to us and very, very meaningful to the world, as anybody who's heard this show for any period of time knows. Now, I've said that this is a celebratory show, and I know that's not a common feeling right now in thinking of the New Year's. People are not thinking, let's celebrate 2021. Because it wasn't an easy year. And most of us, or certainly most of the public celebrations you see, are talking about being happy to see it in the rearview mirror. So we've experienced more COVID-19. We had a violent attack on the capital of our country, which was kind of jarring. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, there was a little attack here. No, because it was so unsettling, because it was the result of outright lies told by someone who was the president. So a president was lying to people so much that they got so angry that they wanted to attack the Capitol. That's unsettling. not just for what happens, but for what it means could happen going into the future. Hopefully that creates further controls on the presidency and on what's allowed, but that's another conversation altogether. We also had a lot of tornadoes, crazy tornadoes, wildfires, droughts, floods, you know, just showing that climate change is not a theory, but it's a current event. And that's unsettling. With that said, despite the hardships, we can also experience gratefulness and hope alongside with the compassion for all those who are suffering. And some of you might be thinking that, oh, you can't celebrate when people are suffering like that. I want you to consider something. Think about the best year of your life or just a great year that you had. Then consider that during that year, tens of millions of humans on our planet died of hunger, not having enough food. All right. So we can compartmentalize. And during that wonderful year of your life, consider the fact that trillions with a T of breathing, feeling, intelligent, loving pigs, cows, chickens, turkeys, sea life, fish of all kinds with personalities and interests of their own were killed just to satisfy a particular taste sensation that humans have become accustomed to. So we can feel joy and gratitude even while there's an unfathomable amount of pain in this world. And for those of us, which is most people on this planet, I think, that are aware of that suffering, there is a space in our psyche to hold that. Like, you know, there's just unfathomable suffering going on right now. And if we were to deal with it in this moment, the way it needed to be dealt with, we'd all be crying all the time. That's how bad it is. But we also step away and live our lives and see what we can do to alleviate the suffering of all those creatures and people while we're celebrating our own lives. So with that said, all that said, I'm going to ask those of you who are with us here today to state whether there's been anything that you've observed in the last year or two, or to you personally, that you feel especially grateful for and that you're moved to share with all of our listening audience.
It may seem obvious or basic or cliche, but for me, I'm just so grateful for friends and my family and people that I know that I care about and connecting with them. I mean, it sounds, you know, well, yeah, but I think with the, you know, with the pandemic and the situation that occurred where all of us, you know, we're either locked down or in more isolation probably than we're used to experiencing. We had to find a way to stay connected and being able to, you know, see what that felt like. And then when I do connect with my friends or family, I just want more and more and more now, you know, it's like amazing. To be able to tell, you know what I mean? Like to be able to tell that it's different for me. Mm. Yeah. So I'm very grateful for relationships with people.
Nice. Yeah. And I'll throw into that as well. Obviously, you know, my relationship with my friends and all the people who I've been working with for all these years, as well as obviously my wife, my parents who live with us, Mr. Kitty, who's just an amazing presence in my life every single day. And even right now, I see him in the distance and he provides just love in all moments. So we're living the life. You know, we work very hard and we love what we're doing while we're working and we're rushing and doing everything that we do. And I'll also mention that I'm grateful for the fact that we have a vegan mayor of New York City. Mm. You know, imagine that. The mayor of New York City is not just someone who's chosen to eat entirely plant-based, but he's vocal about it. He's vocal about the health benefits, about his relationship with the animals. You know, that's pretty big in a world where 2 years ago we had a president who was just doing everything he could to destroy the habitat of the natural world. So that's big.
Yeah.
And I'll throw in one more. Let's say that we do not have the former president as president. I'm very grateful for that. And that's a big factor for me, actually. And it probably is for a lot of people. You don't have to say, well, I don't like who's president now. I think I prefer this person who was president. The fact is we don't have that person who was not well as president. And that's big. That's really big. And I feel that every day.
Not him is a huge thing.
Exactly.
I mean, he presided over a dumpster fire from the pandemic, from the increasing threats and weather events of climate change that he didn't, not only didn't try to stop, but seemingly was pushing in the wrong direction.
He cheered it on.
Devastation. The polarized political landscape, the tempest with the civil rights crises and economic crises, that this guy was just unrepentant about the fact that he was in it for himself and the heck with anybody else, and clearly using a whole lot of people who just didn't understand some of the larger issues, but blindly followed him. However, all of those terrible things also made sort of a neutral state of not bad much better. You know, I think we appreciate smaller things so much more now. Like, you know, maybe we don't always, maybe through the course of our lives, we haven't appreciated our family members and our friends as much as we do now. And the isolation that we've had makes every contact that we do have so much more meaningful.
So, yeah, I agree.
The darkness highlights the light.
Exactly.
So going off what Bettina just said, I think so many of us were feeling so much stress and fear and pressure when we had someone like that as a leader, someone that really wasn't leading. And so that him being gone, of course, has definitely, you know, I think created a lot less stress for people, especially going through all these other traumas at the same time. It almost like would have been too much for us to handle. So I think it kind of kept the top down on a lot of us. Yeah. But like Bettina said, sometimes out of the worst things come some wonderful gifts and blessings. And what I do think happened is because he really allowed people in our culture to become more outspoken about, you know, racism and certain prejudices and sexism and things that were maybe hidden underneath, and they kind of came to the surface. And although it was horrible to witness that, I think a lot of people started raising their awareness about those issues and doing more research, reading more books and seeing films that shared the perspective of what it was like to be Black or Jewish or a woman or, you know, some subculture within our community. So I think in some ways now there's a little bit more awareness and people doing work around those issues, you know, people caring about things maybe they didn't care about as much. So I think a few of us already mentioned, oftentimes in the worst tragic of times, we're going to be able to find the blessings. And for me, I think that's the gift that I'm thankful for, that I'm really grateful for, is finding the calm in the chaos of what's going on in the world around us, and using more time inside to increase maybe more meditation, doing more yoga, having more time for creative outlets and hobbies, you know, organizing, cleaning, cleansing, purging, more, you know, just more of that. Okay, let me see what I can do to make use of this time indoors, and finding those gifts and that joy and that blessing, and, you know, creating more flexibility. I know for me, I had to find more flexibility in my career because one of the jobs I was doing before COVID, I lost, and now I'm looking for new things that I can bring into my livelihood. And I think a lot of people realized they could work from home when they were working outside of the home. So I guess all those things, as well as, like so many of us already said, more time with friends and family. And I've been able to spend more time with my son, and I even had the opportunity of doing some homeschooling. So I'm just looking for, you know, the gifts and the blessings that came out of such a difficult, tragic time.
You know, and along with that, I also found that thinking about myself, I was able to get outside more. I was able to spend more time in nature. I have, I don't know, I think I put like 1,200 miles on my bicycle. I did some kayaking, you know, was able to figure out how to be a better me, you know? And I one of my motivations for that was so that, you know, I could connect better with people. And I don't know, this sounds so corny, but I'll say it. It's like help them be a better them by, you know, encouraging them to exercise more, eat better, get fresh air, all that stuff. So that was cool. And additionally, I learned some new skills, you know, because we had to, right? And that's been a very, very interesting journey. I'll leave it there.
Heidi, can I just say I liked how you put, when you said you got a chance to do some homeschooling, that was a real positive spin on what a lot of parents had to figure out.
It was extremely difficult. It was a huge challenge, but maybe it gave me more appreciation for the school system that we're provided. I mean, and school, unless we're choosing a private school, school is essentially free. And I am so thankful for school because homeschooling did not work well for my child, for his way of learning and the dynamic of the world we live in. He needed that socialization and to be in a building where that structure is in place and he goes there for the learning. It's just really difficult to create that in the home setting. And also I have more I revere the parents that are able to do homeschooling because, I mean, besides I was able to do it at that point because I had lost my work. But once I was working again, then it's extremely difficult to do that because how do you stay home when you have to go out and work? So, but yeah, I just said it was an experience. I wouldn't really want to have to do it again. But again, I'm so thankful for the school system and the teachers and everything that they've been doing through the pandemic to try to keep the children safe, you know, and doing the proper protocols. Mm-hmm.
Free school, you must be a socialist.
Somewhat free. I mean, taxes, yes.
Yeah, well, come on.
Terrible. I can't. Horrible notion. I'll just make a footnote on what was said a little while ago, all about Donald Trump. Let me just point out that we are not talking about him as the great evil because we disagree with his politics. I would absolutely welcome someone with different politics from my own, different perspectives, as long as there's a dialogue and as long as there's honesty. But from our perspective, being people who care about the environment, he actually was set on destruction of our environment. And we've done plenty of shows on this. He was absolutely set on it. He put a coal lobbyist in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency as kind of a joke, as kind of a, you know, in your face, I'm putting someone who's actually contrary to the environment in charge of protecting the environment. That's who we were dealing with. So we're not just talking about a difference of opinion. We're talking about someone who was objectively against our life support system, which is kind of a hard thing to understand, but it was actually true.
If I may interject, not just a coal lobbyist, but one whose life work was to destroy the EPA specifically.
Right. Wasn't he in busy suing the EPA for years?
That was his mission.
Up to when he became its leader.
Right. Yeah. So that's it. So people who are politically on different side than I might be or different perspective, this has nothing to do with politics right now. We're talking about someone who is bent on destruction of the ecosystem. And that's just unpleasant, mildly unpleasant for all of us. So anyway, going back to it. What are we grateful for? Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I guess I've gained a different perspective. I mean, certainly if we want to go back to the Trump years, which I'd rather not think of it as a bad dream.
Please.
But as you said, you know, that definitely impacted. It took us back, rolled back so many of the things that people fought for years to implement that were really important, not just for humans, but all life on this planet. So I'm grateful that we have maybe not the most progressive environmental president, but we one who at least admits that we have some problems and is willing to try to address them. And hopefully it'll be enough to mitigate. So I'm grateful for that. And, you know, this whole time, I mean, I'm grateful for the health of my family members. I did have a cousin who passed away. Sadly, it wasn't from COVID, but you know, all these things bring into sharp focus what's really important in life. And, you know, my loved ones, friendship. I mean, you know, we've had to revert back to very simple living, or at least I have, you know, taking lots of walks, trying to be with people in nature, getting together in small groups, focusing on music, creating or getting to be a part of other communities through Zoom. Thanks for Zoom. Zoom as a way of connecting. There's been a shift, I think, for everybody in how what we take for granted in our lives. And will we go back to the way things were? I know so many people are like, well, I just want to get back to the way things were. But maybe getting back to the way things were is not what we want to aim for. Maybe a new reality for us, a very positive one for people all over.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
Because yes. I think one possibility with this kind of pandemic happening was that we could reset in a different way. Now, of course, the conspiracy people are going to say, he said reset.
I was going to say, like, bringing up the great reset. But,
oh, my goodness.
But, you know, we all need to take time in our lives to stop and say, let me look at what's happening. And is this the path I want to take, or do I want to do something else? Not necessarily on a global level. None of us actually have that control. I don't know. Maybe one of you does. But, you know, we can all make changes in our own lives. And I'm still trying to do that myself in relation to environmental matters and climate change. And I do think each of us can make a big difference.
You know, something else that came out of the pandemic is a lot of us got a step off of the rat race that we never would have had before. A lot of people got time to take that pause and maybe have a look at their lives that they never would have gotten to see without it. So certainly not happy about all the people that were sickened and, you know, all the tragedies that occurred, but take the good with the bad and, you know, to appreciate the fact that people who couldn't go to work got time with their families and themselves and maybe a minute to think, because when all you're trying to do is pay the mortgage and the doctor bills and put food on the table, people don't have time for that kind of reflection. So
great.
Yeah.
And this is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We're doing our sometimes annual New Year's celebration show, which is this year a conversation with a panel of longtime activists, including Catherine Congdon, Heidi Cohen, Eric Eaton, Bettina Barbiere, and Jennifer Grace. So let's shift here a bit to the topic of missed opportunities. That is, what have any of you seen as the biggest lessons not quite learned in the past year or two? And I'm going to start with my take on this one. COVID-19 gave us a perfect opportunity to finally see the connection and the power of various mega issues that we've been talking about for many years, but which society has been pretty much ignoring for many years. And there was a possibility that the advent of COVID would have given us the chance to highlight these and actually take action on them. The first mega issue is the power of disease prevention via diet and lifestyle modification. We've heard a lot about the fact that those with pre-existing conditions were going to suffer more, or were suffering more, from the worst health impacts of COVID-19. What we haven't heard as much as we could have, and this is the lost opportunity, is that most of those conditions, from diabetes to heart disease, cancer, obesity, and more, are largely preventable via a dietary shift. And of course, the dietary shift that we've been highlighting that's extremely effective is toward a more whole foods, plant-based diet. We've seen so much public focus on health like never before, press conferences every day. Now imagine if we did this for heart disease. Imagine the awareness that could be created, the change in direction that we could have, and yet we didn't see it. So why haven't we seen a focus on the hundreds of thousands of people who are dying from these preventable diseases? I guess it's just because it's part of the background. It's what always was. It's not a new event. And so you tend to ignore those. So that's a missed opportunity, actually highlighting the fact that, hey, look, we can get rid of all these horrible outcomes from COVID at the same time as preventing all of these diseases that we've gotten so used to. I'll also point out recently on this topic that the results of two studies showed that those eating a plant-based diet had anywhere from a 40 to 73% reduction in the most severe symptoms of COVID-19. That in itself is huge, and I haven't heard it, except from studies that were sent to me from another physician to my wife, and from Dr. Neil Barnard has highlighted this. And the same studies showed that those on a high-protein keto diet, listen to this, keto diet eaters, were shown to have a 48% increased risk of severe COVID-19. That's pretty bad. Pretty bad. It's marked. Missed opportunity number two.
Not keto vegan, to be
No.
clear.
Keto, high protein.
Keto, yeah.
That should have been broadcast from the rooftops.
Right.
Yeah. I think we've all noticed that, well, right now, the only thing that you really hear is get vaccinated, but obviously with breakthrough infections and things like that, you know, we've got more things to address. And the fact that these things have been highlighted, we'll have further pandemics, you know, no doubt. And how do we address the health issues? You know, we're one of the most unhealthy nations in the world, and that is not talked about. And that was what was beautiful about Dr. Barnard being on our show, is talking about, you know, how do you help your immune system? You know, change your, such simple things, you know, changing your diet and certain things you can do with your lifestyle.
Yep.
Not to mention preventing pandemics in general, which, as Dr. Michael Greger has said so often for so long, that they often or maybe always start in these concentrated animal farming operations with the abuses and the filthy conditions that seem to generate these zoonotic viruses that jump to human populations.
Then you bring me to missed opportunity number two. And that is that we've been suffering from this COVID pandemic for a couple of years, and it hasn't been strongly highlighted that, according to the CDC, 75% of all new emerging infectious diseases are zoonotic in origin, meaning that they are transmitted from animals to humans. Now, while we don't know for sure where COVID-19 came from, and you know, who knows how long we're going to have to wait to actually find out how that happens, it may be the latest in a long line of these animal diseases. This isn't new. These have resulted in tens of millions of deaths in the past century and outbreaks ranging from, HIV, Ebola, the seasonal flu. Remember the 1918 flu? Birds, swine flu, pigs, MERS, SARS. So this is an ongoing pattern. We know it. It's become clear. And so human exposure to these animal diseases that were previously unknown to us because they existed like deep in the forests and humans didn't go there and just kill everything and take down all the trees, came because we are destroying the habitat of these animals, and we are delving into where the bats are and where the other animals are. And we are getting diseases that have been there for millions of years, but we've never contacted. So why are we destroying animal habitats across the planet? Well, it all comes back, and this is the thing with COVID-19, is that it's brought all the issues together, and we start to see the circle of these causes impacting everything. We are destroying our planet's ecosystems from the land and the sea,
from livestock production and fishing.
Those are two of the top causes of global habitat destruction and loss of biodiversity on our planet. So the very cause of these zoonotic diseases coming in contact with humans is often likely associated with our attempt to raise more of these animals for food. How about that? How about that circle? And in addition to the wild habitat destroyed, Bettina, as you were mentioning, we've got the billions of land animals that we raise to kill and eat every single year. And just think about those facilities where these animals are killed, all the blood and the feces and the bodily fluids and the wastes. And, you know, just when we're talking about disease, of course, I don't mean to belittle and talk about them as if they're not important as individuals, but for the purpose of this discussion, it's just disgusting. It's like a horror factory, and humans are coming in contact with that. And it is a very dangerous situation, not just for viruses, But for bacteria, Campylobacter, Listeria, E. coli, Salmonella, just these things that we've gotten used to coming from the fecal matter from these animals. It's just, again, it's a horror show.
And if I made the increasing wiping out of rainforests and environments all over the world to grow more and more of these animals to feed the increasing markets for them, often fast food based.
Exactly.
Yeah, just continuing off what we're already discussing, what I really see as a missed opportunity is we're seeing the same parallels within our medical model, as well as what's happening with our reflecting on COVID. So in the medical model, rather than looking at let's prevent disease, what's the cause of the disease, what's the root issue, we're always looking, you know, from a symptomatic level, let's get rid of these symptoms, but let's not go back and work on where it came from. And that's exactly what's happening with COVID, in my opinion, because oftentimes, you know, people are wanting to discuss, how do we respond to COVID? You know, do we use vaccine? Do we use preventative care? Do we use a combination of integrated, you know? And then anytime I try to bring up the issue of, let's talk about what started this pandemic. Let's talk about the zoonotic diseases and how the great majority of viruses in the last couple of decades have been zoonotic. And no one wants to talk about that. As soon as I bring that up, I get hushed. I get told, I didn't ask for that information. Why are you throwing this information at me? And here's a perfect opportunity for people to, let's go to the root of the problem. Let's talk about how we can prevent future pandemics. Now, I was involved in organizing a local protest on Long Island called Eating Animals Causes Pandemics. And there was protests throughout the nation on that one day. I did one in Long Island. And it was to raise awareness of this exact issue, that the reason we're here in the first place is because of the disease and the filth that is happening in these confinement industries where animals are being raised. And if you go to the website, Eating Animals Causes Pandemics, there is research done by various doctors and various scientists that their belief is we're kind of entering the age of pandemics. And I know it sounds doomsday-ish and it sounds kind of pessimistic, but to some degree, I do believe that if we don't change the way we are raising animals and the food system, the way it's being done, the mass numbers, you know, I, of course, obviously as a plant-based vegan person, I don't think it should be done at all. But for the masses that are still eating those foods, there are, you know, movements now going towards cell-based meat, so that we're not looking at some of those environmental issues, some of the ethical issues that come into play. But rather than people taking the opportunity to see those connections and learn about this and say, yeah, let's look at how we can prevent future pandemics, these scientists are saying these other pandemics that might emerge might make COVID look like a walk in the park. And that's a really scary thought. So there's a lot of missed opportunity here. And also people, rather than coming together and finding ways of connecting, there's such a division, there's so much divide, and that's creating a lot more problems as well and within our culture.
And that will be the next section that we're going to be talking about, which is what has freaked you out. But before we go there, I would just like to mention that there's one other missed opportunity, and that is that the issue of outdoor air pollution is something that we've discussed on this show for decades. And it's a preventable problem. And according to the latest research this past year from Harvard, over 360,000 people in America die from this air pollution. Hundreds of thousands of people dying from this air pollution. 8 million people globally. It's huge. So it's not a tiny problem. And yet very few people know about it. And bring that back to the current events and the missed opportunity. Many studies have shown that this particulate air pollution, PM2.5, is associated with an increased risk of death from COVID-19. So here we go again. And of course, the wildfires are creating more PM2.5 in the air. So COVID-19 has served as the perfect bridge to educate the public on very dangerous air pollution, but mostly it's mentioned just as a footnote. And I'll also add a footnote to that footnote, is that a large portion of the deadly PM2.5, this particulate air pollution in the United States, China, and the European Union and other countries is attributable, yes, to livestock production. So right back at it, the circle always points back, strangely enough, to livestock production.
Bob, I just wanted to say something else about a missed opportunity was it seemed like, and if we think back, we can actually remember the beginning of the pandemic, there was less air pollution. There were cities that were actually clearer and air was cleaner because everything stopped. Everything stopped. Animals even came out and were walking in places, in towns, in cities they hadn't been because people weren't out. So there was some kind of an opportunity, like the machines stopped running, industries stopped, and it was enough for us to see what could be possible in a way that I think something could have happened that didn't. And I don't really quite know how it could have happened or what, but it was really interesting to notice that the collective stop really had an impact.
It was interesting. Our solar panels became more productive.
Wow.
Because there were less particles of pollution blocking the sun.
Wow.
Yeah. It was notable, significant.
I think another missed opportunity was, you know, we had a situation where so many people were leaving large cities and moving to other places. And I think there are so many issues around that that just weren't addressed and they were just left up to their own devices. So, for example, there were a lot of people who lived their whole life in a city relying on buses and subways, never drove a car, driving a car for the first time in their lives, could be, you know, middle age or whatever. And now there are all these new drivers buying these cars. You know, I think if we offered a more ecological solutions in the transportation or the housing or the planning, town centers where people can go and shop instead of having to go outside of town to these big box stores or whatever, you know, there could have been some thought and planning put in. I think that was a missed opportunity there.
Great. So let's move on. What has freaked you out most in the past year? Any events, trends, things that you've seen happening?
Well, I learned something about the ecosystem. I learned that, you know, spiders and snakes, they're part of the ecosystem. And that just freaked me out. That. I'm sorry. It was an awful experience.
Yeah.
The continued schism between the political parties and the fact that the Republican Party is still not governing, but reacting. They want to stop anything that any Democrat wants to do. They're not thinking of their constituents, apparently, or most of them. They're thinking of their ideological hidebound position.
Yeah, I think, well, they're not the Republican Party. I think it's the Trump Party. And he just came out very recently in the last couple of weeks. And he, again, or maybe it was just a couple of days ago, said that it was FBI informants instigating the Capitol attack. Meanwhile, these people have been arrested. We know who they are. We have their social media. They're wearing the hats. They're carrying the signs. We know exactly who they were. So, yeah,
but also members of Congress, these people are still like virulently carrying the banner of Trump and some of the worst ideology of the Trump Party.
That is freaky. Yes.
And it's not going away. And the possibility that it could come back. Oh, my goodness. So that's what freaks me out.
Yeah.
Amid it all, lots of things freak me out. The fires also freak me out.
The fires are hard to handle.
Hard to deal with.
I personally got freaked out by the media and how every bit of news is breaking news constantly. And, just this wildfire of fear and at the ease of which the mainstream media has a grip on our minds. And I just didn't watch for a couple of weeks and I was so much better, actually. And finding my information not on mainstream media.
Yeah.
That was a freak out for me.
It was stark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I will echo what both of you are saying in that the degree to which misinformation can be spread and disseminated is blowing my mind. I just didn't think this was possible. So what I do is people tend to send me stuff and I want to know. So when I have time, I look into some of these things. Someone sent me, and this is an extreme example, just to highlight how bizarre this can get. And I may not get the facts of this right, but just generally, they sent me something about, you have to watch this video. It's very powerful, about nano razors in the vaccines. It's like, okay, I would like to know about that. Nano razors in the vaccines. So I watched the part of the video that they directed me to. And again, they were passing along this video as being authoritative and accurate. The video showed a scientist talking about these nano razors. He was an expert in these one atom thin particles that rip up the inside of your body, right? And they said, this is a scientist, let's say Joe Schmo, talking about this. And then they showed that his place was broken into by the police. And they were like, hey, okay, everybody, blah, blah, blah. And then they said he was killed by the authorities. So the picture I got was this guy, this expert on nano razors and the vaccines, had done research, and the police came in, they got him, and then they killed him because he then later died. Now, this is someone sent me. This is the impression that you get from this video. When I looked into it, A, it wasn't him who had done the research on these nano razors. It was someone else in Spain. The research that they did in Spain did not indicate nano razors. It could have been any one of all these other substances that would have shown up the same way on tests. Three, the sample that this person got that he was doing on these nano razors in Spain was given to him from an undisclosed source. So they don't know what the substance was that they were even testing. Four, the police didn't break into his house that year. That was a video from a year earlier when they had gone into his house that for something that had nothing to do with him. Six, he died of natural causes from a heart attack.
And the people in his life confirms that.
This is what someone was passing on, not just to me, but to who knows how many other people. This is the degree to which we've stopped even looking at the sources of that which we pass along. And it happens all the time.
Including, Bob, mainstream media, though.
Yeah, well, mainstream media is culpable for that forever. We know that. Yes. We know about them.
But this type of thing where they get it completely wrong and they misstate the facts that are verifiable, it's a bit different. I think there are two forms of mainstream media misinformation.
One is that they tend to give their opinion a lot. Okay. Yeah. It is not necessarily unfactual. Like they get the name of the scientist wrong and make up things about what happens, how he died and when the police broke into his apartment. Yes. And then there's mainstream media disinformation number two, which is like climate change, which is where they're putting forth a false narrative that they repeat and repeat and repeat.
Repeat and repeat.
And they provide scientists, often false authorities,
to substantiate this. And yeah, this has been going on forever. Yes, yes, absolutely. That's my misinformation freak out.
Oh, man. I hear you.
Anybody else?
It's kind of mirroring what most of you already said, but I think the three things that have freaked me out the most, one, not in any particular order, but one, the amount of racism, anti-Semitism, sexism, all the isms, of course, speciesism that still exist within our society, and the level of comfort that people feel expressing these isms and how they almost feel proud of it, and how they're okay saying things that even maybe 10 or 20 years ago people would have cringed, but yet now we're living in some kind of climate where people feel more comfortable. And we know that that was definitely, you know, kind of the Trump era had brought about those types behaviors. So that's one. The second thing that's really freaking me out is the amount of climate catastrophe that we're living within and that we're witnessing, and how many people are still in denial about climate crisis. So that's just, you know, you see these movies, Don't Look Up, and these doomsday type movies, and it just feels like we're really living in that kind of a world right now. The third thing is going along what you were just discussing, Bob, the amount of disbelief of information which has no real source. Particularly even people working within the healthcare industry. I'll see people that are nurses that are saying, oh yeah, they're making up numbers. People didn't really die of COVID. You know, insurance companies get money when they say someone, like information that you hear over and over again saying, you've witnessed all these people dying, you've witnessed what's happening, yet you still are out there telling people don't get the vaccine or don't do this. And the amount of people that all of a sudden somehow think that they're pristine. Like, I can almost understand people that have always been maybe anti-vaccine, have always been very opposed to Western modern medicine. I could almost understand maybe where their perspective might be against the vaccine. However, we have so many average Joe Schmo type people that probably on a daily basis drink alcohol, eat fast food, smoke cigarettes, feed their kids garbage, have no awareness or consciousness of what they put in their body, have tattoos, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not saying this to judge any of those actions, really. I'm just saying they're not people with a clean lifestyle and clean, pure eating habits. You know, they're smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer and then going, I'm not taking that vaccine. I'm not putting that poison in my arm. And all of a sudden, these lay people think they're doctors. They think they're medical experts. They believe they're scientists. And when you try to give them information, they shun you and they tell you that the government's trying to control you. And somehow they've associated medical responsibility with government control. So all those things are completely freaking me out.
Heidi, can I tag on to that, the virulence with which they will respond. So people get not only disagree with you and tell you that you're, you know, a patsy for the government,
you're a sheep.
They're angry at you and they're very willing to insult you, call you names, and they think they're winning an argument by shouting louder and saying worse things.
I think the elementary level of discourse that is happening when people discuss these issues is really sickening. You know, yeah. Adults speaking to you like you would hear elementary school children speaking to each other.
Yeah.
It's gotten pretty bad. And, you know, this is not to even mention one side versus another, because look, we've done vaccine information events in the past. And that was education about, well, are there things in vaccinations that are actually dangerous? It's a, you know, an intelligent look at what we're actually putting into our bodies. Because for many of us, we look at everything that we put into our bodies. We read every label. That kind of intelligent discourse is something that is healthy. But I think I'm getting a lot of stuff where I tell my wife about it, who works in medicine. She's like, you know, that's impossible. That's impossible, that level of conspiracy. It couldn't happen. Or if it did, it would require a mastermind of deceit and coordination that is just impossible. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on there where I think because we've stopped intelligent discussion and because we've stopped examining the facts in a way that we really shouldn't, we used to rely upon experts to do that. But now that we have the internet, we have to each be our experts and determine what's true. It's gotten pretty wild. So our level of communication and the degree to which we can communicate is hampered by the degree to which we accept different truths. There are different truths because there is no settled fact. And that makes it, I don't know what the solution to that is. So yeah, freak me out. That is a freak out, because when you have no basis to agree on facts, there's no way to decide on the subtle, more difficult issues that really require wisdom and deep thought and planning and coordination.
I think I have a bit of a solution, which is teach people critical thinking, teach people about fallacies, because when you learn about the fallacies and the uses of communication to fool people, it becomes a little easier to see when people are doing that.
Something that freaks me out that I really kind of hit me, and it's been kind of building up, is the division, the divisiveness. You know, Heidi kind of mentioned some of it, but how quickly people judge and make any sort of thought or question or whatever as other. And which then once they're other, it's almost like they're no longer human and they can be judged, they can be attacked. And you see this on social media a lot. Somebody mention something and boom, it's vicious. I don't think people would do that in person.
No.
I don't think people would do that if they were connected with people So I'll give you a quick example. Is one of my brothers is on the opposite side of the political aisle, right? And we disagree on a lot of politics, but I made a choice to stay really close with him. And we, you know, we talk on the phone pretty much every day, if not many times a day. We really enjoy each other's company. And it's okay that we disagree on things. I don't see this happening throughout society, and I think it really needs to. And that really freaks me out that it doesn't. So that's both a missed opportunity and a freak out.
Can I chime in for a second? Bettina, you mentioned critical thinking, and that is really important. And I don't think that's happening anywhere with this issue related to the pandemic and the vaccine. We have had one story on the media, and we have not had debate. And that's why we have these weird videos and people looking for information in other places, because they're not getting it.
We're just about out of time here. And before we go, though, I will give each of you an opportunity to say something really short, if you have it, on what gives you hope. We've covered some of this before, but what gives you hope right now, looking forward with everything else that's been happening in the rearview mirror?
Well, people are smart. I'm also very hopeful about where electric cars are going, renewable energy is going. I think that there are so many smart people putting a lot of effort and energy into the environment.
I would say I agree. A lot of smart people working on a lot of issues. And one thing I noticed that's hopeful to me in my personal life is there are people that I know have known in my family and friends for decades who finally said to me just recently, oh, you know, I really understand why, you know, being vegetarian is helpful to the planet, or it's good for the environment. And I know you've been saying this for decades, and I finally realize, and I see. So that was really a nice pat on the back and felt very hopeful to me.
Yeah, it's actually, that's a big trend in general that I am very grateful for and hopeful about. And that is the move toward plant-based alternatives. I saw a news report that did a survey of people in a grocery store, and they were asking them about trying plant-based alternatives. They said that, yes, they would try them. And one of the reasons why they wanted to try it is because of animals. But these were people who were eating meat. But as long as there were no alternatives that were just like what they were eating, they were going to stay with that. But as long as there were alternatives that provided taste and flavor and whatever else that was like meat, they would want to not eat it, the regular meat, because they did care about animals. So we all care about animals. I mean, unless you've got, you know, you've got your scattered sociopaths, but we all care about animals. And so I think that given the opportunity to have these alternatives, it's really hopeful that they're going to be coming out, and especially since governments understands that we need to go there for climate change, biodiversity, and everything else.
I was going to say the same thing, and I was going to follow Jen by saying, yes, I see so many vegan alternatives. Every day, somebody puts something new up on Facebook or the internet in some way that's, here's a new one, and here's a new one. And then the people who are not necessarily interested in becoming vegetarians at this moment in time are so much more open to the plant-based alternatives, to, you know, the Beyond Burgers and the other things that taste so great, and they're there for them. So 100% agree with everything you just said.
And you know they taste good because Mr. Kitty goes wild when I start cooking.
Yeah.
Always the best judge. I'm hopeful that more time at home is leading to people becoming maybe more truth seekers and watching documentaries such as Dominion, Game Changers, Forks Over Knives, etc. More time outside is increasing people's reverence for nature and leading to more green solutions. More time in is giving people more opportunities to do fresh cooked home meals, supporting more local businesses, driving less, so less gas being used. So all those things, and especially what Bettina just said, like every day there's 10 new places that have now have new vegan options. And some of it's because of supply chain issues or other things that we're witnessing right now, but it's increasing people's availability to get these types of plant-based foods. So all those things give me a lot of hope.
I was just out in the total boonies And there were so many restaurants with not only vegan options, but vegan menus out in rural Connecticut that it just blew my mind.
Yeah, it's shifting. It's shifting. So our work of, what is it, 10, 20, 30? 30 years? 30 years. Our work of 30 years is kicking in.
Also, people are adopting animals more because they're home more and they're able to spend more time with their...
Aww.
And for those of you on the radio, you're missing the best part of this show. We've got Sasha, Heidi's recent adoptee, lying on the couch, belly up, getting a belly rub and getting Aww. Kissed. Now that's, you know, Sasha. That's it. Sasha is the hope. All right. On that note, this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook, New York. Thank you for joining us for our New Year's celebration show. Hope we weren't too down for you, but you know what? With the good, there's the bad, and we're just acknowledging it all, taking a look back and look forward with the hope. And I want to thank our guests, longtime activists and friends, Catherine Congdon, Jennifer Grace, Bettina Barbier, Eric Eaton, and Heidi Cohen. And of course, our main guest, Heidi's recent adoptee, canine adoptee, Sasha. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
Glad to be here. Pleasure.
And Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everybody. Let's make Happy the best of it.
Happy New Year. Happy and healthy.
Indeed. Another new year, another radio show. And I'll be back with you again on The Healthy Planet at this same time next week on January 14th. And every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of the month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to other natural alternatives and The Healthy Planet shows every week at this time, with great hosts sharing cutting-edge health and environmental information. That's every week, Fridays, at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, or if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. HealthyPlanetUSA.org, or email us to join our mailing list at info@HealthyPlanetUSA.org. Also like our Facebook page, which is at HealthyPlanetUSA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four and multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful, unique planet in this new year. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience, but every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.